Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. I'm your election guru, Mark Brown here. Glad you could join us today. And I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Got it? Good. All right. Now, this is going to be statewide stuff today. Mostly focusing on the new candidate for governor, which I'm sure some of you have already heard about. But we're going to start off first with, yep, you guessed it, an obituary. This is from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. Mia Love, first Black Republican Congresswoman, called for leadership with compassion. By Hannah Schoenbaum and Matthew Brown. Former U.S. Representative Mia Love of Utah, the daughter of Haitian immigrants who became the first Black Republican woman elected to Congress, has died. She was 49. Love's family posted news of her death Sunday on Love's X account. She had undergone recent treatment for brain cancer and received immunotherapy as part of a clinical trial at Duke University's Brain Tumor Center. Her daughter said this month that the former lawmaker was no longer responding to treatment. Love died at her home in Saratoga Springs, Utah, according to a statement posted by the family. With grateful hearts filled to overflowing for the profound influence of Mia on our lives, we want you to know that she passed away peacefully, her family said. We are thankful for the many good wishes, prayers, and condolences. Utah Governor Spencer Cox called Love a true friend and said in a statement that her legacy of service inspired all who knew her. Love entered politics in 2003 after winning a seat on the city council in Saratoga Springs, a growing community of about 30 miles south of Salt Lake City. She later became the city's mayor. In 2012, Love narrowly lost a bid for the House against the Democratic incumbent, former Representative Jim Matheson, in a district that covers a string of Salt Lake City suburbs. She ran again 2 years later and defeated first-time candidate Doug Owens by about 7,500 votes. Love didn't emphasize her race during her campaign, but she acknowledged that the significance of her election after her 2014 victory. She said her win defied naysayers who had suggested that a Black Republican Mormon woman couldn't win a congressional seat in overwhelmingly white Utah. She was briefly considered a rising star within the GOP, and she kept her distance from Donald Trump, was unpopular with many Utah voters while he was running for president ahead of the 2016 election. In an op-ed published this month in the Deseret News, Love described the version of America she grew up loving and sharing her enduring wish for the nation to become less divisive. She thanked her medical team and every person who had prayed for her. Love said her parents immigrated to the U.S. with just $10 and a belief that hard work would lead to success. She said she was raised to believe passionately in the American dream and to love this country, warts and all. America at its roots is respectful, resilient, giving, and grounded in gritty determination, she said. Her career in politics exposed Love to America's ugly side, but she said it also gave her a front row seat to be inspired by people's hope and courage. She shared a wish for her neighbors to come together and focus on their similarities rather than their differences. Some have forgotten the math of America. Whenever you divide, you diminish, Love wrote. She urged elected officials to lead with compassion and communicate honestly with their constituents. In the end, I hope that my life will have mattered and made a difference for the nation I love and the family and friends I adore, Love wrote. I hope you will see the America I know in the years ahead, that you will hear my words in the whisper of the winds of freedom, and feel my presence in the flame of the enduring principles of liberty. My living wish and fervent prayer for you and for this nation is that the America I have known is the America you fight to preserve. In 2016, facing re-election and following the release of a 2005 recording in which Trump made lewd comments about groping women, Love skipped the Republican National Convention and released a statement saying definitively that she would not vote for Trump. She instead endorsed Texas Senator Ted Cruz in the GOP race, but he dropped out months later. While seeking a third term in 2018, Love tried to separate herself from Trump on trade and immigration while still backing her party's positions on tax cuts. She lost by fewer than 700 votes to Democrat Bill McAdams, a former Salt Lake City County mayor. Trump called out Love by naming by name in a news conference the morning after she lost, during which he also bashed other Republicans who didn't fully embrace him. "Mia Love gave me no love, and she lost," Trump said. "Too bad. Sorry about that, Mia." After her loss, Love served as a political commentator on CNN and as a fellow at the University of Sydney. After Trump's election in November, Love said she was okay with the outcome. "Yes, Trump says a lot of inconsiderate things that are unfortunate and impossible to defend," Love wrote in a social media post. "However, his policies have a high probability of benefiting all Americans." That was Mia Love, first Black Republican congresswoman called for leadership with compassion by Hannah Schoenbaum and Matthew Brown, from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. Schoenbaum and Brown write for the Associated Press and reported from Salt Lake City and Billings, Montana, respectively. All right, on to the other business at hand, and the new candidate for governor. From the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, March 12, 2025, Katie Porter to run for California governor. The former House member says she'll stand up to Trump, by Seema Mehta. Former Orange County Representative Katie Porter announced Tuesday morning that she is running for governor, potentially altering the dynamic in an already crowded field of prominent Democrats seeking to replace Governor Gavin Newsom next year because of her national profile and fundraising prowess. Highlighting a theme expected to be dominant in next year's gubernatorial contest, Porter expressed her desire to protect California from President Trump's policies, including his threats to hold up disaster relief, attacks on the rights of state residents, and cheating working families to benefit himself and his cronies. "With Trump in the White House, California needs a fighter, a governor who is going to stand up to him and protect us from the damage he is doing every single day," Porter said in an interview. The looming question over California's 2026 race for governor is whether former vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris jumps into the race. Her decision is expected to by the end of the summer. Given Harris's name recognition and fundraising prowess, she would probably prompt some Democrats to drop out of the race. Describing herself as a big supporter of Harris, Porter did not say she would definitely drop out of the race if the former vice president decides to run. "If she chooses to run, everyone, including me, would need to make a decision," Porter said. "I would have to seriously contemplate what that means for me." She didn't appear to scold Harris for the delay in announcing her plans. "No one should be waiting to lead. I think we need to make a case right now," Porter said, noting that Californians are struggling with health care needs, the price of groceries, and the cost of housing. "There's an incredible urgency on the ground that I think stretches across California and across the political spectrum." Other announced candidates include Democrats Lieutenant Governor Eleni Konalakis, State Controller Betty Yee, State Schools Chief Tony Thurman, former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, former State President Pro Tem Tony Adkins, and businessman Stephen Klubeck, as well as Republican Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco. Dan Schnur, a politics professor at USC, UC Berkeley, and Pepperdine, said Porter's decision to enter the race is meaningless until Harris announces her plans. "If Harris doesn't run, Porter becomes an early front runner, primarily based on her name recognition," he said. "And if Harris does run, then that's the end of the Porter for Governor campaign." He added that donors are likely to sit on the sidelines until Harris makes a decision. Porter, 51, is an Iowa native who went to law school at Harvard, where she was taught by now-Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts. Warren became her mentor, a relationship so significant that one of Porter's children is named after her, and she was a fiery Warren supporter in the 2020 presidential race. After the Great Recession, Porter was appointed by Harris, then California's Attorney General, to oversee a $25 billion mortgage settlement with the nation's top banks. Porter was elected to Congress in 2018 in a longtime GOP Orange County stronghold in Orange County, and was among the most prodigious fundraisers in Congress. Porter's national prominence grew when, during congressional hearings, She grilled Trump administration officials and corporate chieftains using her whiteboard to make esoteric policy understandable. Videos of those performances went viral, cheered by Democrats and disaffected voters. With her sometimes brusque demeanor, Porter also alienated prominent Democrats along the way, notably former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of San Francisco, whom she clashed with in 2021 over committee assignments, and later over Porter's support to ban members of Congress from trading individual stocks. But she was also embraced by constituents who viewed her as approachable, driving around her congressional district in a forest green Toyota Sienna with personalized license plates that read oversight, and being candid about the struggles of juggling her career and being a single mother of three children. She has little patience for political niceties, as she explained in an interview with Samantha Bee on TBS. "If you're full of Bee, I'm coming for you," she told Bee in 2020. "I just don't have time. I'm a single mom. The dinner's burning. I'm late to something. I have 4,000 emails. My hair is frizzy. I haven't shaved my legs in a week." Porter served in the U.S. House of Representatives for three terms, but did not seek re-election in 2024 because she opted to run for the Senate seat held by then-Senator Dianne Feinstein. She angered some prominent Democrats by announcing her run before Feinstein, aging and ailing, announced she would not seek re-election. Democratic Party leaders lined up behind then-Representative Adam B. Schiff of Burbank, who eventually won the Senate seat. Porter finished in a distant third place in the March primary behind Schiff and Republican Steve Garvey. After her loss, she further angered Democrats by arguing that the race was rigged. Porter's language irked Democrats because it echoed Trump's false claims about why he lost the 2020 election. She later said she regretted her choice of words. On Tuesday, Porter argued that the gubernatorial contest is different than the Senate race because Trump is once again president. She said Trump's 2016 victory is what motivated her to run for office for the first time, and she had a proven track record of standing up to his administration. "I have experience with Trump in office," she said. "I think this race is very different in terms of the environment with Trump." During Porter's 2022 congressional re-election bid, GOP rivals raised the purchase of her Irvine home through a program established to create affordable housing for professorial recruits by state leaders. She abided by state and university rules. After losing the 2024 Senate race, Porter returned to teaching at UC Irvine's law school. But her vocal political activism strongly hinted that she would once again run for office, notably her Truth to Power Political Action Committee, which raised more than $1 million in the two-year period that ended on December 31st, according to the Federal Election Commission. Last week, she held a Zoom town hall with Representative Robert Garcia, Democrat of Long Beach. "Katie has been a force in Congress, and she'll be a force in the future, and all the things that she will do for us in our state and in our country," Garcia said on February 27. "The first thing I told myself, and this is the honest-to-God truth, I want to be Katie Porter when I grow up on the Oversight Committee, and I want to take that same kind of energy and passion and really fearlessness in oversight." That was Katie Porter to run for California governor by Seema Mehta from the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, March 12, 2025. All right, here is a follow-up article from the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Monday, March 17, 2025. "Porter has shot at governorship, but there's a hitch," by George Skelton, a columnist from the Capital Journal. Sacramento. "Katie Porter doesn't mince words. She's plain-spoken and can be dynamic. Can she be elected governor? More important, can she govern? Answer to question one, she has a good shot, based on polls, if Kamala Harris doesn't run. No answer to question two. Who knows? At least she has never seemed to be risk-averse. She doesn't back away from a tough fight, but that doesn't necessarily mean success. And she has never held an executive office. The 51-year-old former congresswoman from Orange County stepped into the 2026 race for governor last week, joining an underwhelming field of Democratic candidates trying to replace termed-out Governor Gavin Newsom. Most will scatter to the winds if Harris enters the race. She's the joker card in the contest. The failed 2024 Democratic presidential candidate has said she'll decide whether to run by summer's end. The thinking in political circles is that Harris's name, familiarity, and fundraising ability would put her beyond the reach of current contenders or virtually anyone else who might conceivably want run. The former vice president has a long record of election success in her native state, having won races for the U.S. Senate, state attorney general, and San Francisco district attorney. But although Harris has wide support among Democratic voters in California, I suspect it's shallow, only ankle deep. The then senator bombed while running for president in 2020 and was trailing badly, most notably in her home state, before dropping out ahead of the primaries. Last year, she clobbered Republican Donald Trump in California, but not nearly as lopsidedly as Joe Biden did in 2020. By next year's election, California Democrats could be so apocalyptic over President Trump they'll turn on Harris for losing to such a flawed human being. But Porter, now teaching at UC Irvine's law school, has long been a Harris ally. The then Attorney General chose the consumer protection lawyer in 2012 to monitor a multi-billion dollar legal settlement with major banks over home foreclosures. Porter later won three House elections in a competitive district and national prominence by grilling Trump administration officials and corporate bosses using a whiteboard to simplify complex policy issues. Porter almost certainly would step out of the gubernatorial race if Harris enters. Her entry would have a near field-clearing effect on the Democratic side, Porter said long before announcing her candidacy. And she repeated it last week at a campaign event. If Harris decides to enter the race, I think it's going to have a very, very serious effect on everyone in it, including me. Porter told me, however, that I'm not waiting around. People are hungry for leadership and are worried about what may be coming our way. California wants and deserves to have someone who was all in the fight. The fight is particularly against Trump, Porter emphasizes. As governor, I won't ever back down when Trump hurts Californians, Porter vows in an announcement video. Whether it's holding up disaster relief, attacking our rights and our communities, or screwing over working families to benefit himself and his cronies. Newsom has backed down from directly confronting Trump since the Los Angeles wildfires, trying to avoid angering the vengeful president and jeopardizing federal relief funds. The governor also seems to be veering toward the political center to position himself for a 2028 presidential bid. Give Porter credit for not waiting on Harris to decide. It's smart politically. It gives her more time to raise money, organize a campaign, and reintroduce herself to voters after a failed Senate race last year. Of course, several Democrats proclaimed their candidacies months ago and have gotten nowhere. That's for two reasons. They're not particularly appealing to voters, and voters just aren't interested yet. People's political focus is on the chaos created by Trump. If Harris stepped in, Lieutenant Governor Eleni Konolakis will probably pivot from the governor's race to state treasurer. Others likely to exit include former state legislative leader Tony Atkins, former state controller Betty Yee, and state schools chief Tony Thurmond. But not former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, he insists. I've made it very, very clear, Villaraigosa told me. I'm in it to win. It doesn't matter who gets in. I don't know why there's even a discussion about it. Well, for one reason is that Villaraigosa hasn't held elected offices in nearly 12 years and has been out of the public spotlight. And he finished a distant third running against Newsom in the 2018 gubernatorial primary. He's also 72, and voters may be looking for someone younger. But Villaraigosa wouldn't need training wheels in Sacramento, where he was an effective assembly speaker in the late 90s. I think I have a pulse of where the people are now, he said. They're looking for competence. Not for our people just talking. We need to start building again. Housing, transportation, infrastructure, energy grid. They're saying, get rid of gas stoves, get rid of gas water heaters. But they haven't built any electricity transmission lines. Porter is saying much the same. Like Villaraigosa, she ignored the Democratic establishment last year and supported the anti-crime Proposition 36 to boost penalties for retail theft. She calls for reform of the much-abused California Environmental Quality Act, which can stymie construction projects for years. The goal is environmental protection, not to make things slower and more expensive, she said. Californians hear a lot of excuses from elected officials for not solving the state's problems, she says in her announcement video. What a bunch of B. What we need is new ideas, a willingness to take on dangerous leaders and their corrupt enablers. Porter, at minimum, may infuse some interest into the little-noticed race for governor of the nation's most populous state. That was Porter Has a Shot at Governorship, But There's a Hitch, by George Skelton, columnist of the Capital Journal section, out of the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Monday, March 17, 2025. All right, here is another governor article, going back a little ways, from the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times for Sunday, March 9, 2025. What do voters want from the next governor? A focus on the basics. Most residents have no clue who's running in 2026, but they want someone fully committed to the job, by Mark Z. Barabak, columnist. Fairfield, California. Michael Duncan was adjusting the screen on his front door when he paused recently to consider what he wants from California's next governor. Duncan admittedly hadn't given the matter much thought, but when you get down to it, he said, the answer is fairly straightforward. Do the basics. Fight crime, fix the state's washboard roads, address the perennial homelessness problem, and do a better job to the extent a governor can preventing wildfires like the inferno that decimated wide swaths of Southern California. I just roll my eyes, said Duncan, who logs about 120 miles round trip from his home in Fairfield to his environmental analyst job in Livermore, and who knows exactly where to swerve to avoid the worst potholes along the way. Why does it take so long to do simple things? The answer is complicated, but that won't necessarily mollify a California electorate that seems anxious, aggrieved, and out of sorts, especially as regards to the state's current chief executive. But more than half a dozen candidates are bidding to succeed Newsom. Some have pursued the job for well over a year now, eyeing the day in January 2027 when term limits forced the Democrat from office. You wouldn't know that, however, talking to a wide assortment of Californians, many of whom hadn't the slightest clue of who's running. In conversations last week with nearly three dozen voters from the outskirts of the San Francisco Bay Area through Sacramento to the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, not a handful could name a single one of the declared candidates. That guy in Riverside, the sheriff, said Zach House, 31, referring to Republican Chad Bianco. Outside his door, an 8x12-foot American flag snapped loudly in the wind whipping through his Dixon neighborhood down streets named Songbird, Honeybee, and Blossom. Right now, House said, he's the only person I know that interests me. The Mexican-American gentleman, Brenta Turley, volunteered outside the post office in Rosemont, meeting Antonio Villaraigosa. Wasn't he the mayor of Los Angeles? He was. Admittedly, it's relatively early in the gubernatorial contest, and it's not as though events, the fiery apocalypse in Southern California, Hurricane Trump, haven't been fairly all-consuming. But if voters seem to be paying little attention to the race, most echo Duncan's call for a focus on fundamentals, expressing a strong desire the next governor may be wholly invested in the job and not view it as a mere placeholder or stepping stone to higher office. I feel like Newsom spent more time trying to campaign to be president for the next go-around than working on the state itself, said Duncan, 37, who describes himself as a moderate who tends to vote against whichever party holds the White House to check their power. That all-in commitment is something Kamala Harris may wish to consider as she weighs a campaign for governor, and something she'll no doubt have to address in the event she does run. The former vice president, now dividing her time between an apartment in New York City and her home in Brentwood, remains every bit as polarizing as she was during her truncated White House campaign. Turley, a retired state worker, said she'll get behind Harris without question if she runs. Go for it, the 80-something Democrat urged. Why not? She has the experience. Look at her political background. She was California Attorney General. She worked in the Senate. Peter Kay, 75, a fellow Democrat, agreed. She's better qualified than about 90% of the people that run for any office in this country, said Kay, who lives in Soissons City. The retired insurance underwriter, just returned from the car wash, was buffing a few water spots on his back Tesla, and had this to say about the company's CEO. If he wasn't Elon Musk, he would be in some institution, probably sharing a wing with Trump. The conservative sentiment toward Harris was summed up by Lori Smith, 66, a dental hygienist in Gold River, who responded to the mention of her name with a combination of wail and snort. "Oh, God, oh, my God," Smith claimed, vowing to leave California if Harris is elected governor. "I could never see her being president. We dodged a bullet there. I think she just needs to live her little life in some little town somewhere and go away." There is, of course, no pleasing everyone. Even with a sky a brilliant blue and the hills shimmering green, thanks to a blessedly wet Northern California winter. Some griped about overly stringent environmental regulations. Others said more needs to be done to protect fish and wildlife. Some said more water needs to go to farmers. Others said no, city dwellers deserve a bigger share. Some complained about homeless people commandeering shared public spaces. Amanda Castillo, who lives in her car, called for greater compassion and understanding. The 26-year-old works full-time at a retail job in Vacaville and still can't afford a place of her own. So she beds down in a silver GMC Yukon with her boyfriend and his mother, who were inside the public library charging their electronic devices. "I consider myself to be lucky," Castillo said, "because if I wasn't sleeping in the car, I'd either be on the street or in a cardboard box." Hanging over every conversation, like the big puffy clouds above, but much less enchanting, was President Trump. Most partisans differed, as one would expect, on how California should deal with the president and his battering ram administration. Anybody who has a platform should be speaking out, fighting Trump in the courts, and resisting any way possible, said Eunice Kim, 42, a Sacramento physician and professed liberal who paused outside the library in El Dorado Hills as her boys 5 and 8 roughhoused on the front lawn. Tanya Pavlis, a 35-year-old stay-at-home mom, disagreed. The Rancho Cordova Republican voted for Trump and cited a litany of ills plaguing the state, among them high gas prices and the steep cost of living. "Anyone serving as California governor could use all the advice they can get from the president," Pavlis said, "because the situation speaks for itself." But not everyone retreated to their expected corners. Ray Charon, 39, a Sacramento Democrat who works for the state in information technology, said, "Like it or not, Trump is president, so you have to come to some sort of professional arrangement. You may not agree with all the policies and everything, all the headlines and all the personality stuff, but if you can somehow come together and work for the betterment of the state, then I'm all for it." Sean Cooley, a Trump voter, was similarly matter-of-fact. "There's no fighting Trump. We've seen that," said the 36-year-old Rancho Cordova Republican, a background investigator and part-time wedding photographer. "If you want federal funding, if you want progress, you have to work with those who are on a different side of the table, especially when they're as aggressive as Trump is. I would get a Venn diagram, figure out what he's for and what you're for," Cooley suggested. "Figure out what's in the middle and tackle that hard." Pragmaticism of that sort may not summon great political passions, but practicality seems to be what many Californians are looking for in their next governor. That was "What Do Voters Want from the Next Governor? A Focus on the Basics" by Mark Z. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, March 9, 2025. And here's an article with regards to how our current governor is doing from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, March 12, 2025. Newsom digs political ditch with his podcast. The governor seems to be prioritizing self-promotion while the state reels from a natural disaster, by Mark C. Baraback, columnist. Gavin Newsom, eyes on the White House, vision firmly fixed on his future, is leaning once more into the self-promotion business. One might imagine his hands are quite full these days, being California governor, with what the state reeling from one of the costliest, most destructive natural disasters in U.S. history. 2 months after the hellfires began in Southern California, each day brings fresh pain. But it's a free country, and Newsom was well past the age of consent, so clearly there's no stopping him. Pity that. The Democrats' latest aggrandizing vehicle is about the last thing the world needs right now. Another politically themed podcast. The Warholian notion that someday everyone would be world famous for 15 minutes obviously failed to reckon with the advent of Substack, TikTok, podcasts, and the like. Some personalities make that 15 minutes seem like an eternity. Regardless, this is Gavin Newsom, is now a thing which should not to be mistaken for another extracurricular activities politician. That gig features Newsom, former NFL running back Marshawn Lynch, and sports agent Doug Hendrickson in yet another podcast feeding the hunger of those with a bottomless appetite for the state's voluble chief executive. Announcing his latest moonlighting endeavor, Newsom told reporters, "I want to engage people that often I engage with in private and make public those conversations." That generosity and willingness to share has yet to extend to Newsom's breakfast, lunch, and dinner menus, his step count, or daily hygiene, as the governor's kindness seems to know at least some bounds. But just wait, a memoir, Newsom's third book, is in the works. His new podcast debuted last week, featuring the MAGA megaphone and provocateur Charlie Kirk, and immediately drew the nationwide attention Newsom desperately craves, and then some. His statement that transgender girls and women participating in female sports leagues is deeply unfair produced screaming headlines. This from a longtime champion of LGBTQ+ rights, no less, and acres of analyses from the political commentariat and those inhabiting social media. The collision of sports and gender is sure to be litigated at length as Democrats wander in the wilderness in the months and years leading up to the 2028 presidential campaign. Newsom has laid down his marker. What was less noted after that first episode was the fawning and flattery. "Your success, your influence," Newsom bestowed upon Kirk during an hour plus velvet-gloved belly rub. Kirk has a history of making false and outlandish statements, echoing President Trump's lies about the 2020 election being stolen, promoting anti-Semitic tropes, and stoking racial discord, among other ingredients of his political celebrityhood. You'd hardly know it, however, listening to his chummy chat with the starry-eyed Newsom. It is quite a commendable to hold a civil conversation with those who have different political viewpoints. As a deeply polarized culture and society, we could use a lot more of that dialogue. But congeniality is one thing. It's another to sound as though you've been co-opted, yucking it up and nodding along to Kirk's worship treatment of Trump, his anti-public health views, and expressions of right-wing victimhood. In the words of one National Democratic strategist who did not want to be identified criticizing the governor, it seems like the two were brothers in arms, or at least awfully good buds. The second installment of Newsom's Vanity Project, released this week, featured an amiable chat with Michael Savage, the Marin County-based broadcaster, conservative agitator, and author who has a history replete with anti-gay, anti-immigrant, and anti-Muslim remarks. You'd have to listen closely, however, to discern any major differences as Newsom chortled his way through a discussion of taxes, immigration, Savage's climate change denialism, his celebration of Tucker Carlson, and the discrimination that Savage said he suffered as a white male. "I agree," Newsom said, when Savage related a trip on Air Force One during which he was served a hot dog and suggested Trump was actually a very sensitive guy to other people. Never mind the insults the peril president constantly dishes out, the demeaning nicknames he assigns, like New Scum, or the president's heartless approach to governing. At least, Savage noted, it was a kosher dog. This is Gavin Newsom is full-on cringe. With its forced bonhomie, the show is neither informative nor engaging. It delivers all the pleasures of a bad office party, cuddling up to the Charlie Kirks of the world and struggling and trucking to the Michael Savages, "You're the most entertaining person and personality, and storyteller on the radio, Newsom gushed, is also a strange way to try to build national support among fellow Democrats. If Newsom really hopes to be president someday, the best thing he could do is bang up job in his final 22 months as governor. Not waste time on glib and self-flattering diversions. People have told Newsom as much, but the only voice he seems to care about is his own. Podcast ad nauseum. That was Newsom Digs Political Ditch with his podcast by Mark C. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, March 12, 2025. And now departing the governor's race for these last few minutes, this is from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, February 20, 2025. Erroneous election reminders sent to thousands of voters. Emails went to Southern Californians outside two districts that are voting, by Laura J. Nelson. Thousands of California residents received an automated reminder Tuesday that Election Day is next week, except for most voters, it isn't. The erroneous messages sent by email to Los Angeles County and Orange County voters arrived with a subject line that read, 1 week left to return your ballot, and told voters that that is the last day for your ballot to be mailed and postmarked, omitting the day. Reminders sent by text message said, drop your ballot at a nearby drop box or voting location by 8 p.m. on. Elections officials said the incomplete messages originated with ballot tracks, the software that sends automated messages to voters about the status of their mail ballots. The Denver company has worked with the California Secretary of State since 2020. Steve Olson, the president of Ballot Track, said that automated reminders should have gone out to about 100,000 voters in two legislative districts that include parts of Los Angeles, Orange, Kern, and Tulare counties. Special primary elections are being held in those districts next week. Due to a geotargeting error, the reminder went out to many other voters, Olson said in an email. He said the company is still investigating and will send a retraction as soon as they determine which voters received the messages in error. The Los Angeles County Registrar Recorder's Office said that nearly all voters in LA County who subscribed to Ballot Tracks updates received the erroneous messages. We apologize for any confusion this has caused, a representative for California's Secretary of State Shirley Weber said. Voters in the San Gabriel Valley, Santa Monica, and San Fernando Valley reported receiving messages intended for voters in State Senate District 36, which spans coastal Orange County, Little Saigon, and portions of southern LA County. That district has a primary election on February 25th to replace former State Senator Janet Nguyen, who resigned in November after winning a seat on the Orange County Board of Supervisors. In the Central Valley, voters in Tulare and Kern counties will cast ballots next week to fill the state assembly vacancy led by Bakersfield Republican Vince Fong, who was elected last year to the U.S. House of Representatives. That was Erroneous Election Reminders Sent to Thousands of Voters by Laura J. Nelson from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, February 20, 2025. All right, with the time that we have left, let's give you an updated list of the candidates for governor. Running as Democrats, Tony Adkins, former President Pro Tem of the State Senate, Stephen Klubeck, founder of Diamond Resorts, Eleni Kunalakis, the Lieutenant Governor of California, former U.S. Rep. Katie Porter, Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurman, former L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, Betty Yee, the California Democratic Party Vice Chair and former State Controller, and Michael Younger, Vice President of Calbright College and former Deputy Secretary of the California Labor and Workforce Development Agency. And running as Republicans are Chad Bianco, the Riverside County Sheriff and Coroner, Sharifa Hardy, a business consultant, Brandon Jones, a marketing agency founder, Jimmy Parker, a former judge, and Leo Zaki, Vice President of Zaki Farms, and candidate for governor in 2021 and 22. And running as a Green is Butch Ware, an associate professor and nominee for vice president in 2024. And running as an independent, no party preference, is Javon Allen, an actor. Among Democrats who have publicly expressed interest are Rick Caruso, the Los Angeles mayoral candidate in 2022, Javier Becerra, the former U.S. Health Secretary, and Attorney General of California, and of course, Kamala Harris, the former vice president. Potentials among Republicans are Lan He Chin, the policy advisor and runner-up to state controller in 2022. Folks, that'll do it for now. Until next time, everybody, happy voting and peace.